I'm Josh Cooperman, and this is Convo by Design. Today, we're heading back to Texas. If you are new to the show, I love Texas. I have family there. I lived in Dallas for 9 years. For many years, I had a spinoff of the podcast called Lone Star House of Design. Texas is not one of the design flyovers. It has been for a long time, but the pandemic launched a movement that has since gone parabolic. Today, you are going to hear from Katie Davis, founder of her eponymous firm in Houston. But that's only the tip of the proverbial iceberg here. Katie is one of those designers who took the longest route possible to interior design. And I love this so much because I love hearing the story behind and through the journey. Katie started out as an attorney, a working attorney, meaning, man, she went to law school, passed the bar exam, launched Katie Davis Design in 2018, and now you are going to hear the rest of the story, as well as a guided tour through some of her projects. There are some very interesting tangential connections between the law and design. Katie is not the first former attorney turned designer, but she is equally talented. I don't know what kind of lawyer she was, but she's an incredibly talented designer. And I think you're going to love this. And we're going to get to that right after this. I am so proud of my partnership with Thermasol. They have been presenting partners of Convo by Design for 4+ years. And there is a certain amount of pride that comes with saying that the show is presented by the company that is the absolute best in the world at what they do. Thermasol engineers the most exceptional smart shower products and steam shower systems worldwide for a few reasons. They were the first company to design and patent the technology here in the U.S. dating back to 1958. Thermasol, a U.S.-based manufacturer in Round Rock, Texas, employs an engineering team that designs, tests, and continuously refines the product. Their quality control team tests every single steam generator before it departs the factory. Who else does that? Nobody. I have the pleasure of working with some world-class designers and architects who tell me, and you know this, that the idea of luxury has changed, especially when clients want a spa-like bathroom. Steam is mandatory, or it's just not considered luxury. If you want to add steam, you have really one true option if you want the best, and that's Thermasol. Mitch Altman, third-generation CEO of this family-owned company, of 65 years, continues to innovate the bathroom and shower space through technological marvels such as intelligent showering systems, sound therapy, aromatherapy, chromotherapy, technical interfaces, and so much more. And now, Thermasol, the industry leader in steam bath equipment and technology since 1958, is enhancing its already stellar family of products with the new indoor and outdoor luxury saunas. Available in 3 design configurations, each sauna is handcrafted from clear Western red cedar or Nordic spruce, inspired by the brilliance of Northern European sauna technology and design. Thermasol's latest collections offer luxurious features, and there's only one option if you want the finest experience, Thermasol. Check out Thermasol.com and at Thermasol on the socials. I have so much to get to you, to get to with you. I do. The first thing I have to ask you, though, is why would someone become a lawyer if they really, really, really wanted to be a designer? I mean, it's a random question, I know. I'm just curious if you have a take on that.
Yeah, no, I think that, that's such a great question. I honestly did not see interior design as a true career path at that time. You know, I think that my mom's friends that were, you know, for lack of a better word, stay-at-home moms that also designed on the side, you know, and wasn't really exposed to the level of interior designers that I think are way more prevalent now. I'm not saying they didn't exist. I just don't think I was aware they existed. And then specifically in school, I went to the University of Texas, and to major in interior design, you had to go through the School of Architecture, which basically most people failed out of. So I don't want to fail. So I'm going to go this way.
That seems like a good choice. That seems like a good career choice. I don't know. I don't want to fail. I think I'll go in another direction.
Yeah, I'm gonna
That
go to another
seems
direction.
that seems so random to me, though, that you have to go through the School of Architecture.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's focused on the, you know, more of the concept of commercial interior design, you know, as a lot of interior design schools are. But yeah, so that was the path I took. And then once I was on that path, I kind of just had my mindset on, I'm going to go down this route. And I think it all worked out for the best, but it is kind
yeah,
of
no,
a start.
No, that's great. I mean, it's funny because, like, if we want to talk about doing things the easy way or the hard way.
Oh, you mean I shouldn't have paid for law school?
No, well, listen, no, and I'm not coming at you. As a matter of fact, I have a passion for all the things you do. I come from a family of lawyers, so yeah. I get it. Love design and architecture, so I get it. I have family in Houston, I get it. Years ago, I think 2016 or so, 17 maybe, I started a spinoff of Convo by Design called Lone Star House of Design because I got tired of, like, if you, I say this often, I'm not picking on them, I'm really not, and they wouldn't care if I was anyway, but like AD, the AD100 or El Decor or the Lux List or, you know, any of these lists, you just can't tell me that 95% of the best design talent that America has to offer comes from either San Francisco, LA, New York, or Miami. Or, right. I mean, I just, and really it's LA or New York. And I just don't believe that. So I started that because I wanted to talk about talent elsewhere in what I call the design flyover states, you know, like, but since then you get a lot of attention. What's design like in Houston right now? What's the state of design?
It is huge. I would say that most homeowners, whatever level they're looking for, are reaching out to a designer. So we have people that reach out for, hey, we just want to refresh a living room, or we want, you know, a small remodel of a bathroom. I don't think that those were areas that 10 years ago people reached out to an interior designer for. I think it was just I'm getting pillows. I'm going to go to the store and get the new pillows, or I'm going to go to Pottery Barn's website. Right. And I think that we're probably seeing that surgence everywhere, but specifically in Houston, I would say there is a ton of work, a ton of talent here, a lot of designers, and it makes for a really great community. It's one of my favorite parts about this industry and getting into it is meeting people. And I, of course, had imposter syndrome, right? Like, oh, hey, here I am coming from the outside. And I would say most everyone has opened their arms and been, oh, here's my vendor for that. Oh, you need a drapery installer. And just so neat to have that community.
Well, and that's what I was going to ask you. So you started Katie Davis Design in 2018. Mm-hmm. When did you stop having, and maybe you still do, I don't know, but when did you stop thinking of yourself as a lawyer and start thinking of yourself as a designer? When did you stop having that imposter syndrome? Like, I don't deserve this because I'm a trained and practicing attorney, but now I'm a designer. And by the way, one of the things I love doing with this show is I love talking to people like you. I don't want to just talk to the established designers who have been doing this for 40 years, 30 years, 20 years. I mean, I think new and fresh ideas are remarkable. When mm-hmm. did you know that you belonged here?
I would say when we got something published in 2019, it was a small local magazine, but it just felt like, okay, people like our stuff. It's not just my friend is hiring me because I said I'm a designer now, you know? And that's probably the biggest step there. And seeing our work in print was the coolest experience and still is. But I don't think you really get over the imposter syndrome completely. I definitely think there's moments of like, hey, like, oh, wait, I'm not as amazing as that person. And just like, oh, I'm just over here. But I just feel so lucky to be in this world and be in this industry and get to do something that I love.
Okay. So you start your business, second business, you start your design business in 2018, and you're going at it, working hard for 2 years. March 13th, I believe it was a Friday of 2020. I mean, what's going through your mind?
I was freaking out. That was the biggest thing in Houston going on was the rodeo. And that is a big deal here. And when they shut down the rodeo, my heart sank. And I had just signed a lease. So before then, we had been operating out of my garage apartment. And I had grown to add another team member in January of 2020. So we decided we're going to do it. We're going to have an office, and literally moved in February 2020. So it was a, oh my gosh, the world's ending, which everyone thought, obviously, that feeling. And so kind of how we operated is we all went home, like everyone did, and basically anybody in the next 3 weeks that wanted to do something, I took on the job. You want new pillows? I took on the job. You want, this doesn't matter your budget. We are happy to be a part of it. So that was the initial mindset of like, let's go, let's just take it on. And then it turned out to be the best thing for interior design, as you know. So
When did that change for you? When did you realize, like, I know this is bad and I know people are struggling, but oh my gosh, this is amazing.
I think in May, basically a month later, when our inquiries started flooding in of all the levels, nobody was stopping. I'd say Houston had a little bit of an oil and gas concern too. So we did have several projects that stopped in March because of concerns of the oil and gas market. And once that went away, they were not back at it. Like, okay, great. Well, if I'm going to be home, I want my house to be nice, And so that was just a couple weeks later.
What advantage do you think you have over another designer because you're an attorney? How does that experience and education help you as a designer?
I think it helps in several ways. I think that, first of all, I have a really great perspective on life. But also, I am still type A. I am a creative with a very logistical, pragmatic steps. And I speak to our clients in the way, not from a creative perspective, but from like almost a business side of things of, hey, these are the steps we're going to take, and this is how we accomplish it. And kind of break it down. One of our team members jokingly said, "Oh, you speak attorney." So I know what the client is looking for, and not trying to always be like, "Oh, well, it's just prettier that way," or "Oh, you should do this just because it looks better." Kind of having that reasoning behind every step. And then I'm really transparent in our process. I find that you have questions about our bills, I'm happy to break it down. You have, this is what the vendor is charging. And so a little bit of not trying to hide behind numbers or anything, and just show them like, this is the cost. And so if you want this living room, this is the cost of what it's going to take. Going that route. And then from running the business side, I would say I'm constantly assessing risk, which I would assume a lot of people don't assess risk. But I'm thinking about that all the time.
Yeah,
So.
I would imagine you have to. And tell me something. It's almost freeing. Ignorance is bliss, right? It's almost freeing not having to worry about risk and legal issues and litigation. But being a lawyer, you see every bit of the litigious nature of people, and you're like, oh no, do I really want to be doing this? But how does that, let's say there's a respecification or not that that would ever happen, or something like, something gets to your house, your project house, and it's just destroyed or it's scratched. And now, does the lawyer in you kick in when you're starting to make these calls to try to get things fixed?
I'd say a little bit. I'd say that I've hired an amazing operation manager who is really good at putting my legal thoughts into better words, I would say. And again, I've built the business based on relationships. And so our vendors, we have relationships with. So I don't want to come across as like, well, this is your fault, fix it, And so you can't approach life that way. And I would say good lawyers don't approach their lawsuits that way, right? Like they're going to do a better job if everybody's getting along. So I definitely am looking at it from a, hey, like, okay, that really is, why are we holding the bag here? Why is this on us? You know, this is a mistake by the vendor. What can we do to get this resolved? And trying to approach it in that manner, but trying to stand firm of not letting us hold the bag as much. I'd say a lot of us are feeling that way recently. I feel like it's coming back on the designers of, well, they made it incorrectly, or the product came in broken. We had one today. The product came in paint chipping. And it's like on us to find somebody to repaint it. I'm like, well, it should not come in with all the paint chipping. You know, just send it right. So that's a little side story, but
Yeah, no, I ask because I find it interesting. What some of my favorite conversations have taken place with designers I was working with. I was talking to a designer a couple of years ago who her first career was as a talent agent for one of the biggest agencies in the world, and she was a talent agent. She, you know, that was her job before she got into design. It's like, wait a minute, why? And she's like, well, I didn't want to work 90 hours a week
yeah.
every single week. I just didn't want to do that. I wanted to do something creative. And I think what most people don't realize is that the law is probably one of the most creative endeavors one can undertake. You can be as creative with an idea or a thought as you want to be. It doesn't mean it's going to fly, but isn't that exactly like design?
Yeah, no, it is. I mean, there is, I see a lot of comparison there. So I think that's a great analysis, but of like that is the method. I wrote briefs. I wrote a lot. So that means you're taking case law, you know, what is written down by judges, and you're trying to apply it to your situation, and you're trying to convince somebody else that you're right. I mean, design, at the end of the day, I can have all these ideas, but I'm trying to convince my client to buy this, and like this is why. So it's taking things from different parts, putting it together, and sending out something new, and hoping you land on something awesome that you win. So, yeah.
Do you think that way? Do you think in legalese, silly question perhaps, but do you think that way when you're doing your design? Do you think of it in terms like, it's funny. So I would watch my dad. I remember watching my dad when I was a kid. Like I would go up to his office and the library with all the law books, and you know,
Yeah.
this is at a point in time where he's going through actual books and he's got paralegals and they're in the room and they're all like breaking it down and chopping it up. And I always, when I got older and got sort of fascinated by design and architecture, you know, I'm a journalist and that's kind of my process and how I break things down. And I am curious, design is so unique and it's changing so rapidly. Do you have a process like that? Is there a similarity between how you used to prep for a case and how you prep for work?
Yeah, I mean, I think from the research side of it, I will, you know, I think I'm constantly sinking myself into the world. And I would say that's like the research side of it, of, you know, opening the books and digging deep into past designers, or like, hey, this is a project that's, you know, going to have like a very English cottage style. So where am I going to go look for inspiration for that and make sure? So on the research side of it. And then I think on just going back to the relationship side of it, I do think that that was a huge part of it, from a relationship with the opposing counsel, relationship with the court staff, relationship with the judge. Those are your vendors. So you're pulling ideas from all of that. Crafting the case or crafting the design, I would say, are probably still pretty different, just from a, they just are two different things. But putting that kind of packaging of putting it together and presenting it to somebody else, I definitely think that comes together. Also just frankly, like public speaking, I'm very comfortable talking to people and communicating with all different types of people. And that is from standing up in a courtroom and having to do it on a regular basis, you know? And
What kind of law did you practice?
so I was a criminal prosecutor. So I actually was in the yeah, which is why I do this now. So dealt with the negative, negative all day. But it was a great job, and it was a very hard thing to leave. It becomes an identity, and it was hard to give up, but I am so much happier doing this.
I would imagine.
I
Stakes,
mean,
the stakes are just as high.
Well, I will say, my, that's why I go back to perspective. I'm like, it's a couch. Your
You
family's
know
not
what?
hurt.
Okay, so you know what's interesting though? Your point is well taken and absolutely correct. At the same time, since 2020, since the pandemic, this idea of home has become, and I talk about this all the time. I wonder if sometimes listeners get tired of it, but I don't get any complaints. So I get a lot of suggestions. I got a lot of, but I don't get any complaints about this. So I think it's still a vibe. It's still a thing. This idea that home is as important as it is, and it keeps changing. And what's really interesting to me is, so you're in Houston, and having lived in Dallas for 9 years and having family in Houston and understanding that Texas as both a place, a republic unto itself, and a really stubborn environment when it comes to changing certain things that don't want to be changed. But when something like a grid goes down, or something like the pandemic happens, where you don't really have a choice, something like how the environment, the climate, really the climate is changing, which has to address the manner in which you approach the work. Both architects and designers have to be really cognizant to how things are changing, so that the work you're doing isn't obsolete sooner than it should be. And look, if, for a designer, you have a window of time. Do you expect your designs still to be as relevant as they are day one in year 20? Probably not.
Yeah. I mean, I would hope they, I can see like the application or maybe the type of materials that have changed and grown. That is definitely changing. I would hope that overall the feel of the space hasn't changed. I would hope that wherever we are in whatever spaceship we're in 50 years, that it still feels good, right? And I would say that is the fundamental part of the job that I love, is we are creating a space for people to live in and love in. We talk about our why a lot in our office, and our why here is that we're providing home. And so yes, I obviously want amazing design, and I want it to be really cool and interesting and push the limits and, you know, do all the creative things, but I'm also packaging it to where someone's living in this. And so our clients aren't necessarily, you know, this one house that they don't sit in, like they actually use all their spaces. So I'm kind of going back to that. So I would hope that stays, as far as just like the thread that weaves us through of what home is. And then, yeah, of course the materials will change though.
Well, yeah, and I mean the source of the question is just after as much research as I've done and as many designers as I've had the pleasure to speak with, it's this idea that design isn't, if we're still doing the same design in 20 years from now, there's a problem. It's supposed to change. It doesn't mean like an architect is going to start designing buildings different. It's like, well, this was so last year. Like architecture doesn't kind of work like that, but there are certain trends and certain things that I just think like are happening that are amazing right now. Like one of the things I want to talk to you a little bit about some of your projects in a little bit, but one of the things, some concepts, some ideas, the idea of the kitchen. I want to talk to you about that. I want to talk to you about outdoor spaces because in Houston, I think prior to, I don't know, call it 2018, outdoor spaces didn't exist in Houston, or prior to, 2005, outdoor spaces, you were inside. If you needed more space for outside, you just made it inside because you're not going outside in the summertime. But the outdoor spaces, I was talking to an architect who air conditioned an outdoor kitchen, and I was like, wow, okay, all right, now that's some pro level stuff right there. That's, I mean, I don't know what to think about that. But down to the minutiae, small things like the bar. Bars are acceptable now. In Texas, there's a time when bars, open bars, were not acceptable. It's a different idea. Talk to me about kitchens, because I think kitchens next to bathrooms have taken on the greatest, and then next, and then followed by outdoor spaces after that, have taken on the biggest change, because I feel like a single kitchen home is just not a thing anymore, as far as a home that's been well designed for optimal activity.
The single kitchen is is going, I don't know. It's really interesting. There's a lot of back kitchens or prep kitchens now. We have one called the Dirty Kitchen that we're working on. And then there's the Pretty Kitchen. And it's funny, they have the same things. Like they have a stove, a microwave, things, but it's one's meant to be prettier and the other one's the one that's functioning. It almost goes back to that we didn't really showcase the kitchen before. So I think people are trying to figure out how to navigate that. But not having that open concept, I think that a lot of clients are getting away from that. And so that's where the secondary kitchen comes into play of, well, I don't want to show everything that's dirty and messy anymore. I want it to be beautiful. So how do I hide it all? If it's open concept, it's going to be visible.
You are listening to my conversation with designer Katie Davis. We'll be right back. Man, I love this. I have a new sponsor partner on the show that I want to introduce you to if you're not already familiar with them. If you are a specifying designer, architect, landscape architect, or savvy design enthusiast, if you have heard about the quiet luxury movement, this idea of crafting a lifestyle around understated elegance, simplicity, and sophistication. There's more to it than that. And I will add uncomplicated living. Isn't that what we all strive for? I am extremely happy. I'm really thrilled to share a company that embodies all of this, utilizing proprietary technology and a focus on sustainability in their stunningly beautiful products. It's TimberTech. TimberTech is the premium decking company delivering multi-tonal color blending and natural wood textures in a product that is virtually indistinguishable from a natural wood product. What does this mean? It means it's everything wood should be, a beautiful look that blends seamlessly with a well-designed space, providing years of enjoyment and performs the way you want it to. No splintering, fading, peeling, cracking, or rotting. I had a wood deck at our Manhattan Beach home, and I gotta tell you, it was exasperating every year doing the random board flip, taking out nails, resetting them, restaining them. It was a complete pain. It was complicated, and I didn't look forward to it. I wish I had TimberTech, because TimberTech is not only uncomplicated, it's beautiful. It comes in over 20 finish options and 9 collections, and 85% of the material is recycled. This is premium decking for your next project. Learn more and specify it for your next design project. TimberTech on the socials or timbertech.com, where you can find a retailer near you, as well as a number of tools to create, design, order samples, and get the expert help you may need. TimberTech is uncomplicated luxury and performs. It's your choice for your next deck project. We talk about this all the time on the show, how design professionals like you just don't have the time to find your favorite brands in one place with expert, knowledgeable, and non-commissioned professionals to help you specify the right product for each of your projects, non-commissioned. That means their only incentive is your satisfaction. Pacific Sales Kitchen and Home, a Best Buy company, has just that with over 60 years of service in Southern California. Pacific Sales is your destination for exploration, advice, and inspiration. Now, you have the Pacific Sales Kitchen and Home team to help you and offer their Pro Rewards program, which is a trade program unlike any you've experienced before. Earn 3% in Best Buy e-gift cards or 2.5% in a rewards check for every qualified and delivered sale, in addition to special trade pricing, exclusive offers, access to exclusive specials, events, and more. And here's the cherry on top: access to exclusive builder trade incentives from top brands like Viking, Sub-Zero, Wolf, Thermidor, and Decor, just to mention a few. Terms and conditions do apply to the Pro Rewards program and builder trade incentives. Visit a Pacific Sales expert at a showroom today for full details. and to learn how you can unlock additional savings and benefits. Don't miss out on the opportunity to work with the very best of the best. Visit Pacific Sales Kitchen and Home today and elevate your projects to new heights. Pacific Sales Kitchen and Home, where excellence meets expertise.
Well, I think that that's a great example, because that is one example of something, the idea of open concept is now, I don't see open concept going away in its entirety.
Right.
But I certainly see an adjustment to how open concept has been approached in years past, because it just doesn't work.
Right. Well, yeah. And it's the very loud. I think that families find that of like, you can't really compartmentalize your life anymore. And while it's, oh, it's nice, I can see the kids in the living room, I can still hear everything, and I can't have a conversation with my spouse because it's so loud in that space. And so when we do have open concept designs, we're still thinking about that. How do you define the kitchen differently? How do you separate it so that it's not as open, as cavernous? But I would say at least the last three projects, they've started to pull in this larger butler's pantry or prep space kind of area. And this one we're doing in Midland, I'm excited about, has this dirty kitchen, which like to be the true workhorse of the house. So it's really interesting.
So is this your first dirty kitchen?
No, we've designed another one before, but to have the, as big as it is, I guess it's the biggest one I've had, where it's like, it's not just a back space. Like, it is a true full kitchen back there.
Well, and I'm curious your approach to this, because I love the idea of the dirty kitchen, you know, most used in Asian households, where there's high heat, a lot of grease, a lot of splatter, a lot of odors because of wok cooking and that sort of thing, where when you look at it, I mean, it's almost industrial in nature. It's, mm-hmm. it's stainless on the walls. It's a professional grade ventilation system. How are you approaching this one? How industrial are you getting with it? And is that a comfort level for you? Or are you a little uncomfortable about that?
It's not getting too industrial, because I probably would start being like, this is a little outside of it. But also the family that lives there is not going to probably be doing that intense level of cooking, but it is definitely more focused on the function of it and less of the form. So we've got the huge stainless steel sink with all the parts in it. We've got the wall ovens ready to go. And then looking at more induction style stovetops versus a really pretty range back there, right? So the ease of moving back and forth on a large island. And then there is a flow to it. It has two island spaces, for one for chopping, one for cooking, you know, and it's just really makes it easier for that catering side of this family's life.
Silly question, pedestrian. Do you have a favorite space to design? Like, do you have a thing, like you're like, I'm all about bathrooms, I'm all about kitchens, I'm all about living rooms. Do you have a space that you personally prefer? Not like that the firm prefers, but like, yeah, you personally.
I personally love kids' rooms. Like, mm. I do. I mean, I love doing everything, but maybe it's the small nature or the big impact in a small space that I really like. And it's just fun to do and like come up with some ideas in there, and it's gotta be something that's practical, because if a client's going to spend the money on it, it's gotta withstand time as well as grow with the child. So I love it. I get excited when someone asks us to do a kid's room.
I love that. I do. And I actually wanted to get into some of your projects. So this is a fun game we like to play on the show, where for those who are listening, you know, you can go to the show notes and click on Katie Davis Design, and you can see Katie's work. It's amazing. And the first space that I wanted to stop off in just caught my eye is the teak wood project.
Yeah, that's a great one.
Did you know I was going there?
It's just, it grabs you, you know, that green, it just pulls you in.
Yeah. Tell me about this project.
Oh, that is such a fun project. Our client is a professional party planner, and she wanted something amazing when you walk into her home. And that entryway was just such a jewel box moment. It was a renovation of her home. And so we ended up taking over her dining room, putting that towards the kitchen space, and then using her old kitchen table as her dining area. And so it was a reconfiguration of the floor plan, but we wanted a huge impact when you walked in, and that black and white marble with the bright but deep green, Bansha green from Farrow and Ball just set the tone. She is so cool that she collects like really unique pieces of furniture. So that entry piece was something that had been in her husband's family for years that she'd found at someone's house and repurposed. And so I just love that. I love that you really see her personality there of this is the impact you want when you meet her. She's loud, she's bubbly, she's excitable. And she just wants you to have a good time in her house.
What is the finish on that paint?
It is a high gloss. It is.
That is. And what's interesting is you went high gloss 4x4, like you four walled this in high gloss.
Yeah.
And I just, it's such a strong look. I absolutely love it. Now, jumping to the kitchen, mm-hmm. I noticed that green again. And I'm just curious, is that because it's in proximity to the yes. to the entryway so or did you just love it?
Yeah. Now, when you go through the entry and you take your walk straight into this large family room, and then to the left is the kitchen right there. So that's probably what you're seeing as a snippet of that entry.
You also seem to have a thing for colorful fabrics.
Yes, that is
it's a thing.
It's a thing.
It's a thing. And I love it. I'm looking at that pink sofa. I'm looking at the yellow chair with the pinboard behind the desk, which I think is just, it's interesting to me. It's so simple. And it, right, simplicity is the ultimate form of sophistication. Yeah. Wasn't that like Socrates or I don't know who said it. I'm going to screw up the quote. I didn't say it, but it's so true, right? It's a very simple thing, but it can be so powerful. Tell me about that sofa because it looks like a one-off to me.
It is a really cool piece. That again was a family heirloom piece that she had in her home and we recovered it. That is her office for her team that she was growing at the time, and they needed a workspace. So they both needed a desk. And so we took her husband's old, imagine 1970s, like wood paneled office, and we turned it in to a pink sofa room with this like chartreuse chair. And it was really fun. Yeah.
I love that. Now, similarities, and I'm jumping over to the Beverly Project. Mm-hmm. So I'm trying to figure out, is that a kid's room or is it a young adult's room?
With the canopies?
Yes.
Yeah, that
See, you knew exactly where I was going. You knew exactly. I love that. I love that.
Yes, that is, those, they were three at the time.
Okay.
Of that. So yeah, those two little, they're twins. So there's four girls that live there, four young girls. And that, again, that house was a remodel and fresh take. They were moving. They were getting more space, and those girls were going to share that room. And so the mom wanted to make sure that it was special and exciting and I just was like, we've got to do these canopies. Please, 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 please let us do these canopies. And listening to them scream when they saw them was like highlight of career for sure.
I bet it was. What's interesting too, and it took me through the process of the canopies, because you could have done a couple of things. You could have gone full bed. You could have gone an opportunity to layer in more privacy, considering that there's multiple in the room, right, for noise. Mm-hmm. But you didn't. You layered it so there is privacy to some degree. It's a strong look, but you also left it open for what I imagine would be late night sister talks forever.
Yeah. Yeah. No.
Is that the idea?
Yeah, that's a great point. That room is very big. So you're right. You could have fit larger beds. You could have added more of a partition, but they, definitely at three, they're still best friends, right? And so love the idea that it kind of gave them a moment, like little tent to kind of hide in and love.
Yes. Yeah.
And that was like their special place. But yeah, they're together all the time. So there's really no point of kind of building up two sides of the room yet. Maybe when they're teenagers, we'll go back and do that. But for now, they're loving it.
What do you see happening in Houston as far as a design city, a design destination? I think that it's really interesting because what I'm seeing is, like, especially lately, you have the haves and the have-nots You will have certain cities with just this deep, rich design resources and things to go see, things to touch, places to go, places to be inspired. And then you'll have other cities that just have absolutely nothing, where the closest thing that you can find is, as far as the design center, is 4 hours away. What are the resources like for you? Because you've got a pretty great community there.
We do. We have a great design center. We call it the Deck Center, and it has a lot of the fabric showrooms. And we have definitely the larger furniture showrooms. We don't have as much as Dallas as far as furniture showrooms or things like that. Even something as simple as like a Serena and Lily or thing, like, we don't have that. Dallas has that. So, it's not that far away, which is great if we need to go touch and feel it. But as far as fabric, I think we are on really good there to go in and touch and feel and talk to vendors. And then the other vendors that don't maybe have a local person, they will have a local rep who constantly contacts us and comes by. And so I think because there is such a strong community here, we do get a lot of stop-ins and, hey, we're going to be in Houston next week. We'd love to drop off our new samples. So really rich in that sense of community and being able to meet different vendors and go that route. I will say going to Dallas and then going to High Point and definitely New York, like, there's just more, but I'd say we have a good starting ground, which is really helpful.
Now that everything has opened up again, the idea of designer travel, which is really something that has always been so special. And I don't know, did you go to two-parter? Here's a four-part question screaming at you, Katie. Prior to your really going into design, did you go to all the design shows? Do you go to the design shows now? Do you travel? Do you have the time to travel? And if not, then you're prioritizing, where do you want to go?
I love this question. This is a great question. I did not before. When I got into this, it was really focused in construction design, just focusing on renovations and new builds and not really furniture. I fell into the furniture world because that's the first client that asked me to help them. Just, hey, I need a new couch. Help me find a new couch. So started asking questions and learned how to make a custom couch. And, you know, that snowballed into itself. So I hadn't gone to any of those shows. I have now gone to those shows and gone to places like New York, went to Paris earlier this year. It feels like last year, but it was January.
For Maison.
And so it was, you know, those have been so eye-opening and just so amazing to touch and feel and like, oh my gosh, we use this and specify this brand all the time. Now I get to see everything they've ever done, you know? And so that is really special. And I think makes us a better team being able to do that. So I want to be able to do that more. I want to be able to send our team to those shows to touch and feel and all that. And as far as projects, we are open to travel. We have several out-of-state projects going on. That's definitely the hardest balance as a mom of two young kids and, and wanting to kind of take this career where it's going and getting excited about it, but also being like, hey, I want to be a mom too. So that's just probably the internal battle that most parents feel, but so open to it.
Okay, couple of things. Have you been to High Point yet?
Yes, I've been to High Point.
Once, twice, five times?
We went once. We've been once.
Okay. How did you plan for that? And did your planning meet your expectations? Did your expectations meet your objectives?
Yes, our planning was great. They have an amazing app, amazing they website, and that made the world of the difference. I definitely didn't know what I was getting into, and I would say I'm going to be way better at it now because I'm like, it's kind of like Disney World or Disneyland, if anyone's ever done that, like you just know how to navigate it now. But I had a really good friend who was going to go, and she's like, let's go. And I was like, well, I don't even have a hotel. And she's like, let's just call the hotels. And sure enough, there was an opening. I don't know how we landed that. But being on the shuttle route, that was huge. And then reaching out to our vendors, I'd say that was amazing because they were able to tell us, oh, go here next and do this. Make sure you go see this. And then once I said I was going, it just kind of doors were like, hey, come here, check this out. So it was really good to do that. But I'll be better at it the next time.
So mm-hmm. then here's the question. How do you prioritize? Because, yeah. I mean, look, Maison AJ is amazing, but it's in January. So then you have to lead into, do I go to KBiz, IBS, Modernism Week, covering surfaces? Do I do the Vegas thing mm-hmm. at the same time? Then you're getting into all the spring shows. And then, you know, do you go, which markets do you go to? And then, I mean, there's just so many choices right now. I was going to ask you, have you been to Roundtop's probably a no-brainer.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's in there too. I mean, yeah, I just can't do it all. You know, you can't do the job. I'm very still in the world of the design here. I love that. I didn't want that taken away. So we've hired an operations manager to help me run the business. But I also run the business too. So I can't be gone all the time at shows and events. So we try to just pick something we haven't done. So I didn't do Roundtop in March with the team. I just went on my own just to see with friends and just had like kind of a girl's day because it is so close. But then took the team to High Point. You know, that was this is our trip. This is the moment we're going to go. And then this round of High Point, I'm sending some of the team members that didn't get to go last time. So I'm not getting to go this time because family commitments, and that's like, hey, I'll go next time, or maybe I'll go to Paris again, go to London, but you can't hit them all and still be sane.
No, you really can't. Have you been to KBiz yet?
No, I haven't. That was like, okay, I'll write this one down.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That one's a mini High Point. The beauty there is it's a million square feet, but yeah. It's in one location. So you're okay. Not, well, two maybe, because it's so big and it's so vast. It's so hard to catch everything. You have to really prioritize. Question for you before I let you go. And this is just flying by, but I wanted to ask you, social media and an attorney. One of the things, I mean, look, I feel like we've entered kind of the advent of social media, and I'm not a fan, but it's created this copy culture mm-hmm. where you can just sort of lift things, you can take things. Design, it's very, very hard to copyright a design. Mm-hmm. It's hard enough to try to copyright a piece or rather, you know, trademark something or get some intellectual property under anything you do. But there seems to be this willingness in a copy culture to just take ideas. For you, you know, you're sharing images, you're sharing ideas, you're working with trades, you're working with photographers, you're working with others. How do you, and again, as an attorney, you will know this, but it's one thing to claim IP rights, and it's mm-hmm. another to defend them. Mm-hmm. Is that even a concern to you? How do you manage that, knowing that that's kind of in your DNA?
Yeah, no, it's definitely always something we talk about. And I'd say I've been a little bit more easygoing about it. My biggest thing is, as long, just from a like true, just taking our photo and reposting it, and I think that your point brings up a couple of scenarios, but just the reuse of our paid for photo, right? That's my work, my copyright. As long as they tag back and tag the photographer and whatever, I can't fight every rabbit hole. My mom, however, attempts to do that. She, I saw this person posted and didn't tag you. And I'm like, well, I can't, I would spend all day if we tried to rabbit hole that. So thank you, mom. You know, I appreciate you policing.
Is she a lawyer or just your biggest fan?
No, she's just the fan. She's the best. I love it.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, okay, she's definitely the best. And then I have caught before that this bothered me a lot, was they took our work and then superseded maybe a piece of art or their product they were trying to promote on top of our work and edited our photo. That upset me. And I was like, that's a copyright infringement. You cannot do that. Like, if you want to post our work and then the next picture be your object, I mean, again, that's annoying. You're using our photo, but again, I can't hunt that down.
In that scenario, would you do a DMA takedown, or would you actually write? I mean, look, you can probably write a C&D better than any other designer I know.
I kindly messaged them, direct messaged them, and said, "Hey, you know, that's our photo. Please don't edit our work. If you want to post it, you can tag us, but please don't edit it." And they took it down.
So it was a C&D DM.
Yeah, just a please, you know. And then the photographers, if I see work out there, and I try to protect the photographers too, you know, that is their product, is that photo. And so just people will repost work. I'm like, hey, please tag the photographer. You forgot this person who took the photo. And just making sure they're connected, especially if it's a brand that's selling something, they need to get with that photographer. And then the other part of what you mentioned here that you bring up, though, is just, I don't know if you were trying to get into that, but the copying of design work and how that is that copying, or is it an all inspiration? I think it's just a really interesting, like, topic, I guess, of the world of design. But just thinking on the world of furniture, you know, there's so many. There's maybe a brand that makes a piece, then somebody makes something that's just like it, but it's a little different. And it's always interesting to us of, I didn't know you could do that, but I guess.
Well, it's so funny because my background is in broadcast, radio broadcast. And I've for all of my careers, you know, there have always been people who said, oh, well, you can do this. It's the Dunning-Kruger effect, right? It's exactly what it is.
Yeah.
But there are people like, oh, like you can do that in design. It's the 30% rule. Oh, well, change it by guess what? The 30% rule isn't real. Like, right. It does not exist. It's still a derivative product. And if somebody wants to sue you, they're going to sue you.
Yeah.
And you're probably going to lose because it doesn't look like you have any kind of backup because you thought you just had to change it by 30%. So you're admitting to it's all silly.
Yeah.
But here's why I bring it up. And here's why I bring it up with you, because as a former prosecutor, you still have that in your DNA. You still have that. Like, I would imagine anytime you see something, an injustice of some sort, mm-hmm. hackles are up. Like, before you go, okay, wait a minute, I'm a designer now.
I will say, you're right. It does, like, I had a friend, it didn't even happen to me. I had a friend and someone posted her work and like, took it on as their own. And I was like, excuse me, you did not do that. And so, yes, there is a little bit of a fire in there. But then I think my other side is like, it's.
Well, yeah. But again, I bring it up specifically because I want your take on something.
Okay.
AI is getting bigger and bigger. I think mm-hmm. that with all of my research and my experience now, in AI, and look, I'm not an expert by any stretch, but I did take courses on it. I have done work on it. I have written pieces on it. It's a really interesting dynamic because when you have a derivative work, so if somebody goes to Midjourney or one of these other image gathering places where they're, AI is not artificial intelligence, it's augmented intelligence or accumulated intelligence rather. So it exists, it's not from a God chip, right? It exists in some other form or fashion. So if you're taking an image off of Midjourney, that's a byproduct of somebody else's work. That's a derivative of some, you don't know whose it is. You don't know where it came from. So somebody coming back to sue you is probably going to be pretty hard, but not impossible. And I'm just curious how you think about, because with AI, there are some amazing tools that are going to be available to creatives such as yourself. Mm-hmm. How do you mitigate the risk? How do you maximize the opportunity? How do you incorporate that into the business while, again, mitigating the risk? Because there's a risk in everything we do, but how do you approach that?
Something I hadn't really thought of recently, but yeah, I think it's, well, I guess I had thought about it when we went, just were in New York for what's now What Next. They had the show house, the online show house. And I think the concern would be from a risk, and something I would be very concerned about is, well, okay, you could make that there, but that doesn't actually exist. That product isn't out there. So I can't take that design show house and turn it into a real house for somebody because I can't, that side table just like would never exist, or even the way the windows are, that actually functionally doesn't work in the house. Like going back to the architect, you can't build the house that way. So that would be something I'm concerned of from risk, as well as just this, the taking and stealing of others' ideas and things like that. You know, it's got to come from somewhere. I think it's a really interesting topic. I don't know how you would fight that though. I don't know how you would like get that.
And it's not so much about the fight,
yeah,
or the defense per se. I think for me, it's, I love what you do, right? I love what creatives do. I love the work that designers and architects produce, and artisans and manufacture. I love the work because I am a staunch believer. I believe this wholeheartedly. Good design makes for great life. Mm-hmm. Design makes life better. It just does. It makes you healthier. It makes you stronger. It makes you happier. It makes you, it's just better. And there was a case, a situation a couple of months ago where there was a consultant that I saw on social media, a design business consultant who works primarily with manufacturers. And people are taking, you know, these liberties with AI. And she had basically gone and created, worked with a real manufacturer to create a sink in Midjourney, which means that the product that was created was a derivative, a byproduct of another product that was created, but something of that came new that they then had produced and claimed full credit on.
Yeah.
Here were my problems. And this is why I want to ask you, because I can't ask everyone these questions. And I just want your opinion, not legal advice, just opinion.
Yeah.
Because as a designer, I would imagine that you're going to be coming face to face with some of these things, if not now, then in the very near future. Mm-hmm. First issue is is the IP issue. Like if you're creating something real that was imagined through AI, parts of that you've just changed somebody else's or other people's work to create a new byproduct of that work. So that's the first thing. The second thing was that the idea was, look, you're a creative, you're a designer, you have a design firm. Part of your business model at some point may be crafting your own line. Mm-hmm. It may be crafting a series of your own lines. What happens if non-designers who are just better at computer skills are the ones who are now crafting the work? It takes the ownership of the creative future out of the hands of the creatives and puts it directly in the hands of people who simply know how to manipulate the tools better. Mm-hmm. I have a problem with that.
Yeah. No, it's definitely, and I mean, I think all of the technology that's out there has made it more and more accessible for those that maybe don't have the actual level of creative design out there. And so AI is definitely one of it. And it, my hope would be that you still have to have the design creatives to ultimately get there. Like, you know, you're missing that part. If you don't have something to take a derivative of, you still need that kind of core thing. And so, I guess that's my hope, is that you have to come from somewhere. You have to come from something. I think that it can be an interesting tool, but it can't be your end all be all. It has to be able to be created. If we were to do our own line and to do something like that, it definitely hurts when you see other people doing things that it's like, oh, well, okay, I guess everyone can do it now. But we always just have to stand behind ourselves and say, but hey, we do it better. We do it our way. This is why we do it. And it just kind of goes back to the fundamentals of why we're doing it. That's the designer answer.
Yeah. Let's get to the lawyer answer. No, again, yeah. I asked the question because I think it's important to have these conversations. I really do. It's not just about how pretty things are, but ultimately, unless you have these conversations, eventually designers are relegated to, I'll tell you what, why don't you just give me your trade discount? And it's just such a horrible part of the business, because there are people that are out there who still think that they can do that. Like, just ask your designer for their trade discount and then you'll handle all the nuts and bolts and give them a small retainer. It's like, that's not the partnership you should have.
Right. And I think but that goes down to your business model, like what you like. And so we've actually had to start implementing this in a questionnaire. Is like, what's your goal here? You know, why do you want to work with us? Is it you are so excited about the creative process and what we're going to bring you? Or do you frankly just want my designer discount. Like, that's not why we do it. There might be a business model out there that, like, hey, I have a trade discount at all these places. You pay me a flat fee and boom, you know, that's a business model that could exist. Is it the same designer level of creativity that we offer? No, but there's an opportunity out there for that. And then just making sure the clients are finding their right path of that's what I want versus, no, I know what I want. I just want somebody to implement it for me.
So in wrapping this thing up, you have an experience that is significantly high with your background, which is amazing. At the same time, your design firm is still relatively young. And so I'm curious, let's manifest a little bit here. Okay. What are some things, some types of projects that you would absolutely love to lay down next?
A boutique hotel would be a dream. That would push us huge. That would be in the world of commercial design, which we haven't really delved into, but that would be so fun to like really put together something really unique. I stayed at the Whitby in New York and, you know, Kit Kemp's design is just so inspiring, and to touch so many different lives would be so neat. And then beyond that, it's doing people's full homes in special places that mean something to them. And so whether that's like a family vacation house or a second home, like it's just I love the opportunity to kind of create another place for them to thrive.
Okay. So boutique hotel, cause that's on the list. You want to check that off because that's special. But aside from that, it's residential design for you.
Yeah. I love the residential design. I love the client. I love the family that we're designing for. One of the big things I noticed in our business this year is we've had some great interactions, but I really like getting to know the clients better. And I really like having that relationship with them. And that is the core of why I love this and why I wanted to get into it. It's been amazing to have the success we've had and to, you know, be recognized as really cool, but the core of why I do it was to create special places for people. And that's the end of it. So whether that manifests into something else amazing, it's always been the tug and pull of the entrepreneur side of me and the, hey, you're getting to do your dream job. You know, I'm here. I got it. This is what I was dreaming about and I'm there. So why do you keep dreaming for the next one?
I love that. I'm not taking full credit for this. I'm just saying that there have been on many occasions I've asked the manifestation question, and when I come back, and I will come back, I always do.
Okay.
You know, very, very often it's like, yeah, I got that project. That's amazing. I'm not taking credit for it. I'm just saying, look, like anything else, you put it out there, it's going to come back.
No. Yeah. I mean, truly continuing to do what we do is really it. It's so getting a big project of, you know, full scale build, full scale furnishings every single time is our bread and butter of what we love. So that is where I think we specialize and hone in and get to take it on. And just unique locations would be fun. We love the idea of hitting on the East Coast. I have a project right now in New Jersey, so that's been fun to get to see a different part of the country and work with different people. But
just get it done before February.
Right. we had a project in Colorado and we're there in December, like checking electrical, and I'm like, the Houston people cannot handle this.
It really doesn't.
But
Katie, amazing. Thank you for coming on. Thank you for doing this. Love talking to you.
Oh my gosh, you're so kind. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Design Hardware's newly remodeled showroom is where you will find a gallery-style space with a thoughtful display of products, purposefully positioned to allow unbridled exploration and discovery. High-end faucets, luxury tile, natural stone, wood floors, and bespoke hardware selections are presented in a holistic manner, strategically arranged to stimulate creativity and transition your vision from the conceptual stage to a fully realized space. Conveniently located, free parking available, stop by to find your inspiration, collect samples, get expert advice, and tackle everything on your shopping list all in one place. Visit them online at designhardware.com or in the real world, 6053 West 3rd Street in Los Angeles.
Katie,
Thank you for your time, talent, and willingness to share. I love these conversations. I love sharing them with you. Please continue to email me with your guest and show suggestions, convobydesign@outlook.com, and reach out via Instagram, convobydesign with an X. Thank you to Convo by Design partner sponsors ThermaSol, TimberTech, Pacific Sales, and Design Hardware. For more information about these amazing brands and links to these incredible companies, and to learn more about their products, please check the show notes. For more stories like these from the design community, please make sure you are subscribing to the podcast so you never miss a single episode, because they'll be downloaded automatically to your feed when they're published. And that way, like I said, you'll never miss an episode of Convo by Design, available everywhere you find your favorite podcasts. Thanks for listening. Until next week, be well and take today first.